Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, February 1st, 2019. Coming up this hour,
the S&P 500 turns in its best January in 32 years.
Trade talks wrap up in Washington with the promise of more negotiations later this month.
Shares of Amazon slump after an underwhelming forecast.
An economist forecast another strong jobs report for January.
The Trump administration plans to withdraw from a nuclear treaty with Russia. Plus, President Trump calls the border security talks a waste of time. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. A blockbuster trade between the Knicks and Mavs and Kristaps Porzingis was sent by New York to Dallas. The Nets lost in San Antonio. The Rangers beat the Devils.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks around the world are treading water this morning after the S&P 500 wrapped up its best January since 1987. Coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are little change. Dow futures up 27, NASDAQ futures down 27. The DAX in Germany is up 0.1%, so is the CAC in Paris. FTSE 100 up 0.7%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained less than 0.1%. While the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was little changed as well. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 2.63%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.46%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.5% or 25 cents to $53.53 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.1% on $1.30 to $13.2390 an ounce. The euro, $1.1470, and the yen, 108.93. Nathan.
Karen, trade talks between the U.S. and China have wrapped up with the promise of more to come. Greg Sullivan reports from the Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
We saw that the trade talks did not fall apart, and that while no breakthrough did occur, none was expected, and the two sides remained talking. President Trump characterized the talks as having made tremendous progress, though he did caution that that doesn't mean that a final deal has been had.
Next up, the president says Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer visit China in mid-February for the next round of negotiations.
Beijing, meanwhile, is promising to expand purchases of U.S. goods. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has details from Hong Kong.
China says important progress was made in these talks, that they were candid, specific, and fruitful. Xinhua said that China agreed to increase imports of U.S. agriculture, energy, industrial products, and services. And it said both sides agreed to strengthen cooperation on intellectual property rights and technology transfer. And President Trump also raised the possibility of a face-to-face meeting with Xi Jinping. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Brian. The developments on trade helped boost stocks in mainland China, while equities in the rest of Asia finished the day on softer footing. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with more on that. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Well, the Aussie and yuan slid against the dollar as data showed a private survey of Chinese manufacturing PMI fell to the lowest reading since February 2016. The Taishin survey fell deeper into contraction, dropping to 48.3 in January. That was, of course, the lowest reading in 3 years. Hong Kong stocks fluctuated, but those on the mainland rose, perhaps supported by news of rule changes unveiled by authorities to support struggling stocks. It was the last day of trading for mainland markets ahead of the week-long Lunar New Year holiday. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. And China's authorities have given international investors an early gift for the New Year holiday, access to almost all areas of the country's capital markets. They're proposing changes that include letting offshore funds trade more types of futures and options. Analysts say the move gives foreigners the same range of investment options as local players.
Here in the U.S., it's Jobs Day, with economists forecasting a gain of 165,000 non-farm payrolls in January. Bloomberg's Michael McKee reports.
The government shutdown had an impact on politics, but the impact on jobs will be harder to discern. Because furloughed federal workers will get back pay, government statisticians will count them as employed for the month. But workers in related businesses, such as contractors, lost hours and earnings. That may affect the separate unemployment survey, although it may be hard to see in the data, given the jobless rate is forecast to remain near the lowest since 1969. Beyond the shutdown, the news, as always, will be made in the hourly earnings figures, Fed officials suggesting only inflation might change their new dovish stance. In Washington, Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Michael, thank you. Also in focus this morning, earnings from Amazon. Shares are down almost 5% in early trading after an underwhelming forecast. Jitendra Waral has details from the Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
What shook people was the revenue growth expectation, which came in pretty light. And we think there are, you know, three basic reasons behind that. One being currency. Second being the subscription services revenue saw a material slowdown. And lastly, I think it's a conservatism that they're showing because of the uncertainty in international markets, especially India. So you're seeing a combination of those things weighing on their revenue guidance, but the profit guidance suggests that they're able to manage it.
And the struggles in India were especially concerning. CEO Jeff Bezos has pledged about $5 billion to chase growth in the country, seeing it as the best frontier for Amazon's international push.
We have earnings from Deutsche Bank out this morning. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the results. Good morning, John.
Yeah, Nate, revenue at Deutsche Bank contracted for an eighth straight quarter, led by a slump of the key fixed income trading business. Now, in the midst of a critical turnaround, there is pressure to merge with another bank. The chief financial officer, James von Moltke, wouldn't comment on any specifics, but did give Bloomberg his general view.
Mergers, consolidation in the European banking sector would be sensible for a variety of reasons.
The bank has been shaving costs, but the German government is worried the turnaround won't succeed before the next economic slowdown. Bloomberg News has learned a deal with Commerzbank could happen as early as mid-year. Shares of Deutsche Bank down about 1.5% in Frankfurt. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Apple is punishing Google over privacy issues, temporarily pulling important app development tools from the company. Sources tell Bloomberg the move comes after Google broke Apple's rules by collecting data on user activity and using it for internal research. As a result, Google employees can't access test versions of iPhone apps they're making. Apple punished Facebook for similar rule infractions earlier this week. Futures this morning, little change. Dow futures up 28 and NASDAQ futures down about 28. 10-year Treasury, that'll change, yield 2.63%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here with more of what's going on around the world. Good Friday morning, Michael.
Good morning to you, Nathan. President Trump will suspend U.S. obligations under the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, a 1987 pact with the former Soviet Union, as it prepares to pull out entirely. That's according to two people familiar with the matter. While Europeans and many U.S. lawmakers had hoped to preserve the treaty, the Trump administration argued that Russia has been in violation for years anyway. President Trump says the congressional talks about border security are a waste of time, and he hinted that he's ready to take action to build his wall. In an interview with the New York Times, the president added, "Now, whether or not I declare a national emergency, that you'll see." The president also spoke to reporters at an Oval Office event.
I'm not waiting for this committee. And I've told a lot of people I don't expect much coming out of the committee.
President Trump also says that his lawyers received assurances from outgoing Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein that he was not a target of the Mueller investigation. The Supreme Court will decide in the next few days whether to temporarily block a Louisiana law that requires abortion doctors to get admitting privileges at a local hospital. The measure is almost identical to a Texas law the court struck down in 2016 as imposing an undue burden on women seeking abortions. The question is whether a change in the court's composition, with Justice Brett Kavanaugh replacing swing Justice Anthony Kennedy, will lead the justices to allow the Louisiana law to take effect. U.S. Customs and Border Protection says it made a record-breaking fentanyl bust at the southern border last weekend. Officers in Arizona arrested a man entering the country with more than 250 pounds of the deadly synthetic opioid stashed in the back of a truck carrying produce. CBP Nogales Port Director Michael Humphreys.
More than 100 packages of fentanyl, mainly in powder form, and of 10 of which were in pill form, with a weight of nearly 254 pounds and an estimated value of $3.5 million.
Humphrey says the driver, a 26-year-old Mexican national, has been charged with two counts of possession with intent to distribute. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. 5:09 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashar.
Nathan, when the Knicks just played the Dallas Mavericks, who knew that they would then make a blockbuster trade with the Mavs a week before the trade deadline, but on the same day that their star, injured albeit, Kristaps Porzingis, met with Knicks management to discuss the future of the team. Porzingis, who many a Knicks fan felt was all they had going for them, even though he's been out with a knee injury for a year, dealt to Dallas. Three others go with him. Tim Hardaway, who's been the Knicks' top scorer, along with Trey Burke and Courtney Lee. The Knicks, in return, get a young point guard, Dennis Smith, two first-round draft picks, plus DeAndre Jordan and Wesley Matthews, whose contracts expire after this season. So the Knicks now have loads of salary cap space. The question will be, can they lure free agents to New York this summer? The Nets lost in San Antonio 117-114. Shabazz Napier missed a three at the end that would have tied the game. The Rangers down 2-0 early, came back and beat the Devils 4-3. The star was Mika Zibanejad. He had his second career hat trick, including the game-winning goal. A key to all the Super Bowls the Patriots have been in, the ability of the opponent to pressure Tom Brady. The Giants did it in both their Super Bowl wins over New England. And the Rams on defense feature Aaron Donald.
You know, you go against a great quarterback or any quarterback, your main goal as a pass rusher is to try to put as much pressure as you can on them, make them move off the spot, you know, trying to make them uncomfortable so he can hand them overthrows and make his day a lot longer and harder than what it should be. So we just got to do our job, stick to our game plan, and we'll be fine.
Pats and Rams, Super Bowl 53 Sunday in Atlanta. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. Tune in tonight for a special Bloomberg Business of Sports show ahead of the Super Bowl. We speak with the man in charge of the L.A. Rams front office, Chief Operating Officer Kevin Demoff. You can catch that conversation tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. before the big game right here on Bloomberg Radio. S&P futures are flat. Dow futures up 26 points. NASDAQ futures down 27. 10-year Treasury yield 2.63%. The two-year at 2.46%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak on this Jobs Friday. Coming up on 5:12 on Wall Street, indeed, the January unemployment report due at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Wells Fargo senior economist Mark Vintner joins us next with a look at the state of hiring in the American economy. This is Bloomberg.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is Jobs Day. Today we're looking for the January jobs report at 8:30 Wall Street time. At 10, it's manufacturing from the Institute for Supply Management, consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan, and wholesale inventories. Stocks are lackluster following the best month for global equities in more than 7 years as earnings continue rolling in and investors watch for the resumption of U.S.-China trade talks. Right now, S&P futures are little changed. Dow futures up 22, NASDAQ futures down 26. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. DAX in Germany, little change. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 2.62%. Yield on the two-year, 2.46%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.4% or 22 cents to $53.57 a barrel. COMEX gold, little change, down 80 cents to $13.24.40 an ounce. The euro, $1.1469. The yen, 108.91. We do get earnings today from Big Oil, with Chevron and ExxonMobil reporting before the opening bell. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger has a preview.
Bloomberg Intelligence says ExxonMobil's earnings were weak in the latest quarter, though chemicals likely provided some support. Chevron is seen covering distributions from organic cash flow despite falling indicators. Upstream earnings for both companies will be hurt by falling crude oil prices. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thank you, Jeff. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. President Donald Trump seems to be signaling that he may declare a national emergency to bypass Congress and build a border wall. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has declared that there will be no wall money in any compromised border security deal. The U.S. is said to be withdrawing from a nuclear treaty with Russia. Two people familiar with the matter say President Trump will suspend U.S. obligations under the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty as it prepares to pull out entirely in 6 months. In the NBA, the Nets lost along with the Warriors. In a blockbuster trade, the Knicks have sent Kristaps Porzingis and three others to the Mavericks in exchange for Dennis Smith Jr., two others, and two first-round draft picks. In the NHL, the Rangers beat the Devils 4-3. The Bruins lost. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. Coming up to 5:20 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak as we await the release of the January employment report at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. We're joined this morning by Mark Vintner, senior economist at Wells Fargo. Good to talk with you this morning, Mark. And, of course, we all remember the blockbuster print we got in December for the December report, 312,000 jobs. I'm guessing you're not expecting we're going to see that kind of level of employment sustained.
No, I think we'll probably see a little bit of a payback this month. We're looking for 155. And one of the things that was really underreported about that last number is that the response rate, the number of companies that reported unemployment during December, was the lowest it's been going all the way back to December of 2007.
Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure. I don't know what to pin it on. But typically when you have a low response rate, you have a big revision. And we're going to get revisions this month that go back. We get the annual benchmark revision that goes back the last 2 years. So I would be surprised if that 312 held up. But the revision could go either way. I think it's more likely to go down, though.
Okay. Now, the 155,000 that you're predicting there is on the low end. Are you expecting that the 200,000 level, the average that we've seen over the last several months, is going to start pulling back now?
We're expecting that over the course of the year. I think we're going to be closer to, say, 160 to 175 on average for the year. I suspect that there's so many job openings right now that the economy has cooled off a little bit, and those job openings are probably being filled a little bit quicker. And I don't know if senior management has gotten through to the HR department that, hey, things have slowed. Maybe we need to pull back on some of that hiring.
So with this report coming out on the heels of the Fed basically putting the pause button on further rate hikes, how important is this report in particular going to be to the newly data-dependent Federal Reserve?
Well, it's one of the few pieces of real-time data that we have. I think they're going to be paying particular attention to what's going on in the factory sector. That's where the slowdown in the global economy is likely to impact the U.S. economy. And the data in last month's report was very strong in the factory sector, even though the ISM index has come down. And I think that they're going to be looking at that as well, which comes out later this morning. Last month, we saw the biggest drop since December of 2006. So manufacturing is clearly pulling back. Another area that I think they're looking at is housing. And housing's been pulling back for the last 9 months. The numbers looked horrible, except for, we had a real strong new home sales yesterday, but the trend's been down. That's the primary transmission mechanism for monetary policy. And so if we don't get a revival in housing, and if we don't see that in the construction employment data, then I think that's a source of concern.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about the kind of pullbacks that you're projecting here, what does that mean for the rate path for the Fed?
Well, we still have two rate hikes, one in June and one in December. But quite frankly, the June one is the one that's most problematic because the global economy is slowing. You see that in the German rates. And even if we get a trade deal with China this month, which I think we'll probably get an agreement in principle, and then we'll iron out the details later in the year. But even if we do get that, I think there's been so much damage to the U.S. economy and the global economy that growth is going to slow in the first half of the year. I think it's going to make a June rate hike tough for them. But they would like to take rates a little bit higher. It's really hard to believe that 2.5% is neutral in an economy that seems to be growing around 2% at its core and has about 2% inflation. You would think a neutral rate would be higher than that.
So where do you see the neutral rate then?
Well, we're at 2.75 is what we calculate given the quantitative tightening and the enhanced forward guidance that we have. If we didn't have those, I think it'd be 3.25, 3.5.
Well, again, the January unemployment report, the employment report, I should say, comes out at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time, following the 312,000 jobs created in December. Mark Vintner, senior economist at Wells Fargo, is projecting 155,000 jobs created in January. And your unemployment rate, Mark? Well, the estimate among economists surveyed by Bloomberg is 3.9%. Again, the employment report comes out at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Full coverage, as you've come to expect, on Bloomberg Radio starting around then. Futures, looking for direction. Dow futures up 27, NASDAQ futures down 26 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's 5:25 on Wall Street. Tune into the weekend edition of Bloomberg Daybreak, where we set you up for the week ahead on Wall Street. It airs tomorrow morning at 5, again at 4 in the afternoon, and Sunday mornings at 9 right here on Bloomberg Radio.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks around the world are treading water after the S&P 500 wrapped up its best January in 32 years. U.S. futures and European equities are little changed. Stocks in mainland China rose more than 1%, while the rest of Asia posted modest losses.
And trade talks between the U.S. and China have wrapped up, with Beijing promising to expand purchases of U.S. goods. Few other details were provided, but both sides say important progress was made. Deborah Elms is executive director for Asian Trade Center.
The bar is set pretty low, so as long as no one stormed out of the meeting, I think everyone is going to call it tremendous progress. That didn't happen. No one stormed out of the meeting, so therefore, tremendous progress was made.
Up next, trade talks in Beijing, where President Trump says he'll send Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer later this month.
It is Jobs Day here in the U.S., with economists forecasting a gain of 165,000 in non-farm payrolls in January. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice reports.
January's data could be affected by the five-week government shutdown, which led to the furlough of hundreds of thousands of government workers and contractors. Outside of that, labor market data have been consistent with a healthy business sector. Unemployment has been below 4% since July. Vinnie Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. Also in focus this morning, earnings from Amazon. Shares are down more than 4% in early trading after an underwhelming forecast from the company. Bloomberg's Ramey Innocencio has more.
Investors are now weighing a second consecutive quarter where the company's expectations fell short of Wall Street's. Rising expenses remain a threat for Amazon, along with money-losing investments abroad. But the company says it's still committed to expanding in India as it evaluates the impact of new e-commerce rules. I'm Ramey Innocencio, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Ramey, thank you. Earnings also in focus this morning from Deutsche Bank. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. Good morning, John.
Karen, revenue fell 2.4%, led by a slump in fixed income trading. Deutsche Bank has been facing declining revenue for 4 years. That's adding pressure to explore alternative fixes for Germany's largest lender, which may ultimately seek a merger with Commerzbank. The shares right now are down more than 2%. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thank you. S&P futures, little change, up a point this morning. Dow futures up 36 and NASDAQ futures down about 23. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 2.62% and the yield on the 2-year, 2.45%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.2% or 11 cents to $53.68 a barrel. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. 5:33 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's happening in the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. The Congressional Conference Committee continues to try and hammer out funding for a border security bill. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter reports the principal players involved continue to play hardball.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's very concerned about the president not wanting to include the legislature in the border security issue.
What did he say today? It doesn't matter what Congress does. I knew that he wanted it all to himself. I mean, oh, really?
She says no money for a wall. The president says non-starter.
No, because if there's no wall, it doesn't work. She's just playing games. So if there's no wall, it doesn't work.
Conference committee continues to meet. in San Francisco. I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Fake news, that's what President Trump is saying about his top intelligence officials publicly contradicting his claims of foreign policy success with Iran, North Korea, and ISIS. During testimony aired live on radio and TV before Congress, he revealed that he has spoken to CIA Director Gina Haspel and Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats to express concern over their testimony to Congress earlier this week.
They said that they were totally misquoted and they were totally, it was taken out of context. So what I do is I'd suggest that you call them. They said it was fake news, so, which frankly didn't surprise me.
Well, he just ran exactly what they said to Congress.
Excuse me. It didn't surprise me at all.
The Trump administration is set to announce it is withdrawing from a nuclear arms treaty that has been a centerpiece of superpower arms control since the Cold War. The withdrawal would follow years of unresolved dispute over Russian compliance with the pact, known as the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces, or INF Treaty. U.S. Customs and Border Protection says it has made a record-breaking fentanyl bust at the southern border last weekend. Officers in Arizona arrested a man entering the country with more than 250 pounds of the deadly synthetic opioid stashed in the back of a truck carrying produce. CBP Nogales Port Director Michael Humphreys.
Anomalies were observed in the trailer's floor, specifically in the rear portion.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, not much has gone right for the Knicks in a long time, and right now they got the NBA's worst record. But in 2015, with the fourth pick of the draft, they landed Kristaps Porzingis. Young, tall, skilled, he quickly became an all-star. Tore his ACL, hasn't played in a year. Yesterday, Porzingis met with Team Brash, reportedly told them he wants a trade, and about an hour later, he was dealt a blockbuster trade with Dallas. Seven players, two first-round picks, and Porzingis goes to the Mavs along with Tim Hardaway, Trey Burke, and Courtney Lee. Knicks get three players. DeAndre Jordan and Wesley Matthews both have expiring contracts. That clears salary cap space. Dennis Smith, good young point guard. They get the two future first-rounders. The Knicks' plan is to lure free agents this summer, but will they want to come? The Knicks, since 2000, have won one playoff series and won a championship in 46 years. The Nets in San Antonio took the lead of the fourth quarter, fell short, 117-114. D'Angelo Russell, 25 points in defeat. In L.A., LeBron James returned. The Lakers beat the Clippers in overtime. The Warriors lost to Philadelphia. That ends Golden State's 11-game win streak. In Newark, Rangers and Devils tied at three.
The Devils do not have an answer for this line.
Zuccarello centers. MSG. Blue Shirts won 4-3. They've won 4-5. Devils have lost 4-5. College hoops in the NEC. Wagner, LIU, St. Francis all lost. So did Iona in the MAC, where Ryder beat St. Peter's. Wins for Manhattan and Monmouth. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan.
John, thank you. 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week has arrived on newsstands. The cover story is the takedown that landed former Nissan chairman Carlos Ghosn in jail. Matthew Campbell wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
What's so remarkable about this is that it occurred amid a pretty incredible power struggle that was going on within Nissan, one in which Carlos Ghosn and his successor, his protege in some ways, Hiroto Saikawa, were at odds, divided, for quite a while over a number of things.
Read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly. Weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report. Let's check in with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. A state judge in Manhattan has lifted an order blocking New York State from collecting a $2.50 per ride congestion surcharge from customers who hail yellow taxis in New York City. The city's yellow or medallion cabs and some for-hire vehicles operating below 96th Street in Manhattan will be adding the surcharge. Arctic temperatures have made New York City's natural gas among the most expensive on Earth. The cost of gas for a Thursday delivery on the Transco Zone 6 for New York City jumped 29% to $14 per million BTU Wednesday, more than quadruple the U.S. benchmark. New Jersey lawmakers passed a bill Thursday raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2024. The bill on its way to Governor Phil Murphy's desk, where it's likely to be signed if enacted. New Jersey joins California, Massachusetts, New York, and the District of Columbia in phasing in a $15 rate. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Ed, thank you. It is 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Wing prices catch fire as buyers swoop in before the Super Bowl.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WCCO in Minneapolis, I'm reporting that many large metro areas closed out 2018 with a jobless rate below 3%, including the Twin Cities area.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting on earnings, sales, and future plans for the owner of Madison Square Garden.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on how UK factories are stockpiling at a record pace ahead of Brexit.
I'm Steve Podesk, and on KYW in Philadelphia and WTIC in Hartford, I'm watching quarterly results from Cigna.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting the dramatic swing from passenger cars to trucks and SUVs may be fading, according to Honda.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're watching, hedge fund manager David Einhorn is making up for a bad 2018. The main fund at Einhorn's Greenlight Capital rose more than 13% to post its best January ever. Last year was the worst ever for Greenlight when the fund fell 34%. This first morning of February, futures contracts are looking for direction. S&P futures down about a point, Dow futures up 13, NASDAQ futures down 30. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak on this Jobs Friday. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Marks Paneth LLP. Marks Paneth Tax Advisors have helped family businesses reach their financial goals for over 100 years at Marks Paneth. Success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/tax.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is Jobs Day. We are watching for the January Jobs Report at 8:30 Wall Street time. At 10, it's manufacturing from the Institute for Supply Management, consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan, and wholesale inventory. Stocks are lackluster following the best month for global equities in more than 7 years as earnings continue rolling in and investors watch for the resumption of U.S.-China trade talks. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down about 2 points, Dow futures up 13, NASDAQ futures down 31. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 2.62%, yield on the 2-year 2.45%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.25% or 14 cents to $53.65 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed at $13.25.40 an ounce. The euro, $1.1469. The yen, 108.90. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, it could be the end of an era, one that began during the Reagan administration. The U.S. is expected to suspend a landmark arms control treaty. The Trump administration is poised to announce today that it is withdrawing from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. President Trump says the congressional talks about border security are a waste of time. The president, speaking to the New York Times, hinted that he might declare a national emergency to build the wall. In the NBA, the Nets lost along with the Warriors. In a blockbuster trade, the Knicks have sent Kristaps Porzingis and three others to the Mavericks in exchange for Dennis Smith Jr., two others, and two first-round draft picks. In the NHL, the Rangers beat the Devils 4-3. The Bruins lost. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it is 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Jennifer Ryan, Bloomberg Opinion Editor, joins us on this Friday morning from our London Bureau with a focus on Amazon's earnings report in the fourth quarter from Shira Ovadai. The company reported revenue nearly 20% higher year over year, but of course That's not the whole story that markets are looking at this morning.
It isn't, because actually that rate was the weakest growth since early 2015. I mean, there are some caveats here. Some of the changes from a shifting mix of retail sales and some accounting changes. But the broader picture is that it's just becoming clearer that Amazon, the incredible growth machine, is becoming, I guess, kind of less incredible. This is not the higher margin beast that has sent shudders into every corner of the corporate world.
Yeah, so what's behind the slowing growth for the e-commerce giant?
Well, there's two things that are worrying for onlookers. Is one, that the forecast revenue for the first quarter, the company gave a range on Thursday, $56 billion to $60 billion. If you take the midpoint of that range, that growth rate would be the lowest since 2001, when Amazon was just 1% of its current size. Secondly, the company reported growth in paid units, which are the number of individual items sold on Amazon, continued to slow in the fourth quarter to a rate of about 14%. Last year, it was 23%. And in the conference call with stock analysts, the company said that people should essentially not pay quite so much attention to the growth rate in its e-commerce merchandise business. And that's the kind of comment that's going to make listeners to the call sort of fall off their chair.
Yeah, certainly when e-commerce is Amazon's core business. So, I mean, what's the takeaway here?
I mean, the broader point is that no matter what growth hurdles Amazon shows for now, it's really hard to ignore the company's untapped potential. So think about its two main business lines, consumer retail and technology sold to businesses. The winds for both are blowing in Amazon's direction. So take the U.S. In there, less than 15% of all retail spending is online. But of course, the share of that is growing. And then think about the business side of things. Spending is shifting towards the type of technology outsourcing and cloud computing that Amazon provides. So those things both look promising. But still, if you're an investor, you're paying through the nose to own a slice of that potential. And the difficulty there is that now that the company's finally started to deliver on profit, investors might be disappointed that some of the amazing growth has sort of leached away.
Yeah, and talking about amazing growth leaching away, I mean, that has been the story for so long with China, the subject of Anjani Trivedi's piece saying why cutting interest rates won't help the world's second biggest economy. You'd think that Beijing would be tempted to cut rates given that the Federal Reserve has hit the pause button.
Yeah, I mean, never get in front of the Fed. But and on top of that, I mean, think about the broader picture for China. The economy is sputtering, deflation looms, and businesses are downbeat. Of course, you've got the trade tensions with the United States, and those don't help with the growth outlook. And yet, amid all this, we haven't seen the outright rate cuts. Sure, Beijing has other weapons, such as changing its commercial reserve requirements. But really, the hiccup here is that, you know, these changes aren't affecting the real economy. They're not feeding through. And in most other parts of the world, the groundwork would be laid for an interest rate cut.
Yeah, so then Anjani doesn't think that a rate cut would feed through into the Chinese economy either? Is that the problem?
Yeah, the problem is that there's a difficulty with the transmission mechanism, and the financial system really runs on two tracks. Banks' deposit rates are largely controlled, while money and bond rates are market-based. Now, you consider that China has had a long history of depending on its banks to drive the economy, and you can see that cutting official interest rates becomes a very tricky affair, because what you're doing is chipping away at the profitability of the very institutions that the country needs the most.
All right, so just quickly here, what does Anjani see as the solution?
Well, Beijing's hands are pretty much tied. I mean, these multiple challenges mean that all the talk that we've been hearing over the last couple of decades about interest rate liberalization are going to continue to sit on the back burner. And if you've been waiting for an interest rate cut, you're going to be waiting a little bit while longer.
All right, Bloomberg Opinion Editor Jennifer Ryan, thanks as always. Head to Bloomberg.com/opinion to see these stories or type in OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal. Karen.
Well, Nathan, while it's earnings, the jobs report, and the Fed in focus today, on Sunday, it'll be all about the Super Bowl. We're just 2 days away, and Bloomberg's Janet Wu has been with fans in Atlanta all week. She's watching what they're doing and buying and brings us details in this report.
Lucky fans at the Super Bowl Sunday night will be able to buy their team championship shirts as soon as the clock ticks down to zero. The NFL is doing something new for fans who want instant bragging rights.
The end of the game this year, we're actually going to have the championship t-shirt available for fans as they're leaving from the game. So we will have that ready for them.
Is that the first time ever?
Yes.
It means you've got to print both shirts.
It does.
That's Jessica Crist of the NFL. Those shirts will be limited in number. Something else even more limited, how about an item best described as bling bling football?
So what we have here is a VIP shop that has some Swarovski crystal encrusted helmets, clutches, footballs.
So that helmet is $7,500.
Yes.
There's a Patriots crystal encrusted football.
Yes. This one is $4,000. You know, it just has that something about it that everyone is kind of looking for.
Wilson is making 900 footballs on site. People can see their purchase being sewn, laced, and inflated. The basic ball is $180. Add your team logo and favorite player signature, and you have to pony up $240 for the pigskin.
So in a normal, traditional, it takes about 20 days to get a ball through the factory.
Getting into the game gets harder every year. Just getting there isn't cheap. Magellan Jets, which charters around 300 private aircraft, from helicopters to the Bombardiers and Gulfstreams, says this is their biggest event of the year. And COO Todd Weaver says they'll go way above and beyond the flight booking.
So if you can close your eyes and visualize what the world's most fun tailgate party might be like for the New England Patriots, we have managed to encapsulate that experience. Put it on an airplane and launch it up in the air 3 miles in the sky.
Rates range from about $3,500 to $20,000 an hour, with the Super Bowl requiring 4 hours of flight time. Here's Davio's chef owner, Steve DiFilippo.
People from Hanscom Field call us Arthur Blank. We cater his plane a lot here in Atlanta. So a lot of these people want to have their food, Davio's food, on their planes, and they call us and we cater them.
What's the most unusual request you've had for food?
Sometimes you get a call and someone will say they want burritos, you know, and I'll say, you know, it's Davio's, right? Northern Italian Steakhouse. But we want burritos. I'm like, no problem. We can make burritos, you know, so, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter to us. We can do anything.
Food continues to be a big deal on the ground in Atlanta. We spoke with a chef who was flying in a lot of ingredients.
So the champagne will flow before and after the game, as there's, you know, some post-game parties as well.
And champagne needs oysters.
We have around 4,000 oysters coming in. Most are coming from Maine and Massachusetts.
Everyone is talking about the food inside the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium, how cheap it is. You can thank Home Depot co-founder and Falcons owner Arthur Blank.
They're going to be experiencing food and beverage assortments and pricing that are 50% below everybody else.
The food may be budget, but the $1.6 billion stadium is not. There are three premium clubs at field level. You can have a glass of wine and walk out sliding glass doors and be right behind the player benches. 196 luxury suites have a great view of the 8-arm retractable roof and the world's largest digital scoreboard at 58 by 1,100 linear feet.
I always refer to this as a stadium that aspires to be a Ritz-Carlton. There are a couple of places inside of this building, a couple of bars, where if you squinted your eyes, you could be in any upscale hotel anywhere in the world.
Good thing, considering the rates people are paying to be there. At Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta, Janet Wu, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Janet, thank you. And Nathan, how long do you think it takes your kid to lose a $4,000 football? That's the big question.
That's it.
Probably much faster than a $180 football.
Oh, yeah.
S&P futures lower this morning. Bloomberg Daybreak continues.